Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
It is so good to see you. Thank you for joining me here in beautiful sunny California, San Jose. We have a very special guest today, my good friend and former colleague, Bobby Kulkarni, who is a leader in global supply chain for a medical technology company. Thank you so much for joining. I'm very happy that you're here with us today.
Thank you, Allison. Excited to be here and congratulations on this podcast, making it to California.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, the drive was long from Vegas, but we always love coming back to California, especially on beautiful days like this. So I'm glad you could be here with us today. I would love to ask you questions. I've actually gotten questions from my social media followers previously before today on what you do, how you got into this line of work, any advice you have for them, any advice you have for people in today's certain economic times. So that's what I would love to talk to you about today. So let's start with a little bit about your current situation. So you work for a medical technology company in California. Tell me a little bit about what you do and what you love most about it.
So if I can share my experience over the past 5 years, helped launch products for a medical device company here in Sunnyvale, California, and always been passionate about where am I impacting, especially in the human healthcare sector. And when I combine my skill set or my passion, this role came about to another good friend of mine who referred me here. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, peeling back a little bit, you asked me about here and how did I end up here. One of the things I remember 18, 20 years ago, I had no clue that I was in supply chain. Most of us fall into it by default, or we navigate through certain things, like okay. certain things. By education, I have industrial engineering as my degree, and also grad school, I went to University of Detroit. It was definitely not focused on global supply chain. It was more business oriented. I ended up in global supply chain when I had a chance to do my co-op at Delphi Automotive System, nothing remote to medical device. That's also because I worked in a year at Toyota in Bengaluru, India. That's my hometown. And when I ended up doing the co-op at Delphi, I was allocated to the global supply management group. If you think about automotive space, so I was doing planning in Toyota, and then I went to and I came to Delphi. It was more of purchasing and the cost pressures that they had, especially when they were about to file for bankruptcy, which I didn't know at that point in time.
Right.
And they needed all hands on deck to negotiate contracts, to execute not only purchase orders, but also work through supply management issues.
So it was almost on accident.
Yes.
So you fell into it.
I fell into it. Huh. I also enjoyed the analytical aspect, which we talk about trend analysis and how the suppliers perform. And all again, all done in a little bit older version of SAP and more, we still doing Excel analysis. And then the second aspect was going out and meeting new suppliers, understanding the technology and actually walking through the plant and what we do.
And isn't the economics of supply chain so interesting? It takes a million things to make one thing.
Yes.
And you have to make sure this supplier is doing their job and this supplier is doing their job, and it takes a village to make one thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yes. Indeed. If I how to explain to my fifth grader, who's my inner child, think about making a Lego, or is playing with Lego.
Okay.
We have to plan for the resin that makes it, the mold that makes it, And then you have to source the resin. You know, you think about plant source and then making it. After you plant source, you make it. And it becomes a Lego piece. And then we talk about delivering to the retail and each wholesale or retail companies. So it's plant source, make, and then deliver. In some cases, we'll have to returns, and we talk about service and delivery. So in the nutshell, it's a five-word still score model. Why do you use in the industry? Plan, source, make, deliver, return or replace. Or
so it's a big cycle.
It is a virtuous cycle, and you pick what you're really passionate about if you want to navigate to the career. I realized it's been more than 15, 16 plus years for me, is if you're passionate in any one of these, start off a career in any one of those plan, source, make, deliver domains, go deep as possible and become the expert. Don't worry about the rest of the supply chain yet, but see how you can connect the dots as you start growing your career. You can always pivot. I pivoted from planning to sourcing, and I support all the make and work with the service planning team, work with the delivery teams, warehouse, distribution centers. One of the things I enjoy most, doesn't matter what industry I have been in, is connecting the dots with multifunctional, cross-functional teams.
I like that too. I like working with other people because then you have suddenly a new perspective. And you, like, if you have a conversation with somebody from a quality department, suddenly I'm seeing the project through the lens of the quality regulations that we have to abide by. And I think, oh, I didn't even think of that. Or, oh, I'm so glad this person's on the team because they're looking out for the quality things, as am I, but they're the experts. So I like that too, the cross-functionality of different projects, because no one person can do it on their own. You can't do global supply chain on your own, I'm sure. It takes, one, all of those suppliers, and then two, you said plan,
source,
make, deliver, yeah. And then return?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that must take a huge team. So do you lead teams at work?
Correct. I do lead teams at work, both cross-functional and direct teams, both in North America and Europe at this point in time.
Wow.
It's exciting. Sometimes it's also exhausting because you're getting up early or taking late night calls, but it is fulfilling. End of the day, here's what I question myself, even end of the week. Every question I ask, I make a difference. You know, everything that we built or made a decision today, is it helping a procedure or is it helping a patient? End of the day, did we deliver? That's what keeps me going.
That is exactly what kept me going too when I was a program manager for the exact same company.
Yeah.
I loved when they had patients that had received the medical devices or interacted, doctors that had used the medical devices in practice. They actually had them come on stage and talk to us in our all hands meeting. And they said, you are making a difference. Mm-hmm. You are saving lives. Maybe not directly, but indirectly, you are close to the customer and close to the patient. That always warmed my heart so much. And if I was ever having a rough day or a rough week or a rough month at work, I always looked at these people that maybe had a lower quality of life because of a disease or an illness or cancer or whatever their ailment was. And I always thought, you know what? I'm doing this for them. And it makes me feel so good that I can help the world in that way. And I always found that so motivating. So
awesome.
Yeah, glad to hear that you felt the same way.
One of the things that I have always driven, like, you know, what's my purpose? As much as you have worked across multiple industries, I've worked in automotive, biotech, going to high tech, and then now med device, and you know, who are truly delivering solutions, not just, hey, this disease, you know, you take care of this, but going back to even can you diagnose it early?
Yeah,
let's prevent it. That makes a huge difference. You know, there have been multiple instances where my family members have received care and also devices like a stent for
that you've worked on.
No, my colleagues have worked on.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's really close to home. And you'd probably trust, you know, we meet all these colleagues and these peers and coworkers, and you think, you worked on that project and my aunt is having that surgery tomorrow.
Yes.
I trust your abilities and I trust that my aunt is in good hands or my family member's in good hands because you worked on that.
Correct.
That's a beauty in networking at work in such a small industry like med device.
It is.
I love that. Hey. Yeah, and I've met a lot of people that have had different procedures from the things that you and I have worked on. And it's so cool meeting them because they say, where do you work? And I tell them and they say, oh my gosh, I had a procedure with that. I'm like, oh, how'd it go? Have you ever met anybody that has said that?
Yes, actually, one of my mentoring guide, I didn't even know this company existed. This is about 14 years ago. He had to go to an emergency procedure, and he said it was outpatient. This is in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
I was working for another med device company back then. And he told me when both came to California, he's working for a different company, and he said, I was a patient, and they used this device. That's a platform. I didn't even know they had the device back in Minnesota back then.
Wow.
Yeah, we lived in such a small world that you don't think or reflect, this is what we do, and then end up coming to the Bay Area. Here's a company that's operated in one of our metros, and feels good to go with you. Day and
that's in some shape. That's so great. I love Med Device for that reason.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity when I was studying engineering at Cal Poly, I had the opportunity to do aerospace engineering or civil. And I thought, you know, do I want to build airplanes or bridges? Probably not. And then I learned about Med Device and biomedical engineering, and I thought, that sounds so cool.
Yeah.
And I just love the human body aspect of it, because a bridge, you know, it's not supposed to move that much. A plane isn't supposed to move that much, I mean, when it's in the air. But, like, Med Device, it integrates with the human body, which is changing and adapting every single day. Mm-hmm. And so you have to build something robust enough that can integrate and interact with such a dynamic environment. I think it's so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And we had one more question on the current economic conditions.
I'm curious.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll answer to the best of my ability. I'm the Fed chairman or...
Not yet.
Not yet, yeah. Or a financial advisor. But I keep listening to a couple of podcasts that helped me to stay up to speed. One is Financial Times. And then, of course, some snippets from Wall Street that help me understand what's going on at the macroeconomic level.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everybody knows there's high interest rate. Bay Area has one of the highest cost of living. What has made me more aware as I'm growing as a parent and as a employee and then also as a person, it's your net cash flow that matters a lot. So we can earn as much as you want, you know, how much ever you want, but you need to really look at what's the cost, what's the outgoing expense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to control that aspect, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Back the economic conditions, every 10 years we have seen the cycle. Now, 10 years ago we had the recession. Now we are actually coming back, not from a recession, but post-pandemic.
Right.
Economy.
Which is different. It's way, weird and different.
Yeah, way different, where we have now returned to office mandate in certain tech companies.
And
some companies are still remote. How do we balance? Nobody knows. Absolutely nobody has any answer. No, we need to be able to react or adapt. So to me, it's all about adapting yourself. And how will you adapt to your specific condition? Because you may be a person working in a restaurant.
Right.
There is no way there can be a remote job. But if you're a tech worker who's able to code both at home or at work, you still need to show up at work according to certain folks. There is more interaction, more brainstorming that happens. And in my world, what I have experience is, especially if you're launching new products, but synergy that you work with engineers, and working with suppliers on the site, it's invaluable. That in-person interaction, while you're developing a physical product or mid-device product, can do it in remote. It's not possible to launch a product if you don't interact with design engineers early in the process.
A physical product. I would tend to agree with you. I'm a huge fan of remote work.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into remote work in December of 2019. So 3 months before we all started working from home.
Yeah.
Luckily, and I was an engineer before, I would not have been able to go remote. But I'm a big fan of remote work because it allows for the individual's flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the best thing for companies. And I've never said that on the record before, but you're absolutely right. When you're building a physical product, mm-hmm. you need to see it and look at it and see, oh, there's a scratch. I need to take this to mm-hmm. the material review board or whatever.
Yeah.
But hardware, it's way more tough. And I think if you're selling a service or maybe software or making an app or a website, sure, remote work works. But I would have to agree with you that for hardware, it's really tough.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I keep getting asked a question from my 10-year-old or fifth grader, what is supply chain? How do you explain that to fifth grader?
How do you explain that? I mean, do you ever take him to the grocery store? I would probably explain with food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's stickers on avocados, like made, grown in Mexico. Uh-huh. So you can talk, you maybe, that's how I would do it. I would show him, okay, this tomato is not from here.
Yes.
You've seen tomatoes grow in the garden, but this tomato is from a different country. And remember, we've gone to a different country. Yeah, that's how I would explain it. So how do you do it?
Well, one of the funniest examples I have is, where does, you know, where do you get low? It's Costco. Was the answer when he was too good.
That's cute.
Yeah. And then we went to a farmland and he saw how they would extract dairy farm and where the milk comes from. Like, yeah, cow, and that gets bottled, pasteurized, and then pasteurized, bottled, and then comes into the store. So super dumb. So again, you have to go through that cycle from the source. Where do you source it?
Yep. So speaking of source, back when cryptocurrency was, and stay with me, back when cryptocurrency was the hottest topic,
yeah,
I heard a lot about how companies wanted to put supply chain on the blockchain just to track it and make sure that there were good ethical practices, sustainable practices, traceability. Have you seen that happening at all? And what, that whatever happens with that?
Yeah, good question. I always wonder when I looked at Gartner's hype cycle that goes on every 1 year, and sometimes we see we're here, there, this product cycle. The cryptocurrency, it's fantastic tool to use. What we have not seen is actual application in the cloud source to make. What we have seen is in the delivery aspect.
Oh.
Yeah, in the distribution logistics of certain high-value goods. And not necessarily in the med device, in art form. Right, you know, people are selling the art piece, and then how do you authenticate this is the actual authentic person or artist who's selling it?
Right,
and they are the one who gets paid. That's a real life practical application.
Yep,
I may be limited in my knowledge of cryptocurrency and how it gets, you know, monetized to the point where it becomes the standard gold currency.
Right,
but it's not there yet. Because adoption and even understanding of the cryptocurrency right now is still limited to only certain sectors.
And I think it's probably that you have to adopt it for it to work.
Yeah.
Kind of like self-driving. You drove a Tesla.
Yeah.
I used to drive a Tesla and I used to think, how are they going to have self-driving be on the roads if only some cars can do self-driving? It almost is like they have to flip the switch where all of a sudden every car is self-driving. That's the only way it would work. And maybe it's the same with blockchain. If everything was on blockchain suddenly, maybe it would all work. But yeah, you bring up a good point that it's probably not, I don't know how you could do the planning part on blockchain.
But we turn all the ERPs to blockchain, convert all those algorithms, all the manual process that we do today, feed into that. But again, one of the things I found is blockchain, how do we look at blockchain? Is like digital currency or digital layer that sits on top of everything,
right,
is attuned to machine interface. We haven't yet cracked the core, at least in my purview of what I've read and experienced so far.
Speaking of machine, AI is the hottest topic right now.
Yeah.
Have you seen any uses of AI or machine learning in supply chain? And what do you see as the future, even in the next 6 months or year, for artificial intelligence with global supply chain?
It's widely used and it's really cool to use AI and everything. It's coming down in the sourcing and procurement world. What's come down to is, what's the most repeatable process? Can it be done by two systems that interact?
Okay.
It can be as simple as cutting a purchase order.
Okay.
On the indirect side, when I say indirect, the material that is not used to make the product.
Okay.
When you do that on the indirect side, it's easier because they know they want a service, a purchase order received. They know the parameters. You know, there's a buyer, there's a seller, there's agreed upon price, cut it, and then all you have to do is push a button. I'm simplifying the headquarters there. And same thing with contract management too. But there is negotiation that happens before we upload a contract.
Right.
Smart contracts, as they call it, in some parts of the world. I've seen some use cases where the smart contracts are used.
Okay.
I'm not sure we call it artificial intelligence, but the machine reading code of an old contract and uploading all the electronic data, we call it the metadata, to be able to extract when the contract is expiring. It triggers an action to the buyer or the company that they need to renew or renew the terms.
That is so cool. I'm really glad that you're telling me that that's being implemented, because I hated doing purchase orders. Ariba, that was the worst part of my job. I hated working in SAP too. I love product, but some of that stuff was not intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that AI is being used for some of these more repetitive tasks that don't really require human interaction. Like negotiating does, like you're saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, purchase orders, invoicing. Yeah, I think that's great. So do you use AI at work?
We use some version of it, not a full-fledged version.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes a long time to adopt again.
Right.
We always think about technology-wise. First, it will all be used in military or space research. Then it will come to aerospace. Then it will go to automotive. Then automotive and high-tech or semiconductor world. Then the rest of the industries follow. I would say that this is how I've been seeing the trend over the past two decades.
Makes sense.
In my career. And then there's medical technology. Yeah, there are certain technology in my device where we're using chips or nodes that are still built in the 90s technology.
But if med devices are one of the last sectors to get this new technology, we know that it's safe.
Yes.
Because lives are at stake.
Correct.
And we're holding the human heart in our hands, literally and metaphorically.
Yeah.
So I think it makes sense that these new inventions and technologies would take a longer time getting to medical technology.
Yeah. Another thing I have seen in planning, slowly we are using certain algorithms, which we know if you plan, you put a limit. Like, example, I don't want to buy more than $10 million. Here's my limit. And they know the simple calculation. This is so many. I have $5 million on hand, and I only need to buy 5. It's like 10 minus 5 is 5. So you go buy 5. You can put that algorithm in place in certain ERPs. It will do it for you because you already have the supplier who will supply, and you know where to ship it.
That's nice. So then it's less for you to remember.
Yeah.
It's something that triggers something automatically, and then you can free your mind to think about other things.
Correct. And then take that off. And those simple calculations that can be applied. Same thing goes to I was observed on distribution centers and how they optimize inventory levels. Now, we have the ABC analysis. We have complex economic order quantity that can be fed in. But the point is, when you have a med device or any physical product-based company, they have to always worry, or they have to be very cautious about what's the inventory level at all the distribution center. They can't have $1 million sitting there without moving. So based on how slow the goods or physical product moves, they can automate that, will make it a trigger point for people to buy less or buy more.
Uh-huh.
And even they have to think about excess and obsolete portion of the inventory.
Okay.
Because if it's obsolete, how do you do it? It's a loss to the company.
I see. Okay. So this is obviously a skill that somebody needed to have before this was able to be automated.
Yes.
So you've also mentioned ERP.
Yeah.
Is that enterprise?
Resource planning.
Okay. Resources as in people or material?
Both.
Okay.
And the machine.
And the machine. So tell me a little, switching gears here, tell me a little bit more about the skills required for supply chain, maybe some that you learned at the very beginning that were absolutely necessary, and then some stranger ones that you've learned along the way that have helped.
The biggest thing's an asset. Doesn't matter what part of supply chain you're. Be curious. The first C. And the second C is communicate. Communication is nothing but listening and talking back or understanding what's being asked of you. Third thing, collaboration, again, as a supply chain individual, you need to know how to connect the dots, or where are you the dot, and how do you drive solution, but also finding unique problems that you can solve. That's such a key aspect. But if you're starting out, be very curious. If it's plan, source, make, deliver, or return or service, go as deep as possible. You know, go not one, two, but 3-4 layers. For one very good example, in MedDevice or in automotive, you want to know how am I purchasing a specific nut that goes into fixing a hardware or a screen panel. Now, you can just go buy a hexagonal nut from Home Depot, but would you understand what the material they have? Where is it actually coming from? Where do they actually machine it? What machine's being used? How much time is it being used to make it? You can go as deep as possible. Then can the machine wear 5,000 today? Can they make it 10,000? Then it's capacity questions. Then going back to the material, why only that material? Go ask it, talk to the engineer. Why did we use this specific material, stainless steel versus an aluminum part? Then you can go even deeper. Aluminum. Now we're just looking at where is the aluminum ore found? There are only a few sources in the earth. You go have to go back to the source, which is you mine bauxite, then you get to the aluminum pure form, convert it. So
this is really deep. You could go...
Yes.
These are rabbit holes you could go down.
Yes.
Okay, so the be curious you're talking about is ask questions and find out as much as you can about the material, every aspect of it.
Yep.
And then also probably with all of those, there's something that could go wrong with each of those.
Correct.
With the material, with the supplier, with the timing, the price.
Yes.
The availability, the quantities. So do you also do risk management?
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. We call it global supply chain risk management.
You know? Okay.
We have all aspects when we look at a source or a supplier. We look at, you know, from a risk standpoint, there are 5 to 7 elements depending on which industry. So let's stick to the example of you're buying a specific nut, you know, hexagonal nut.
Okay.
A risk would be if the supplier in a geopolitical conflict place.
Oh, you have to take that into account too?
Yes, that's just one of it.
Okay. America has a lot of drama, so that's probably a complicated part of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Take an example, if it's close to the Ukrainian border trade.
Right.
Light example.
Yep.
That is a risk. Then the next question is, how does a person in global supply chain mitigate that? What's the action plan? It can be a secondary source outside of the conflict or even closer to the manufacturing plant. The other aspect of risk is the supplier does not have capacity, right? The person who, and supplier's financial health rating. And you also think about supplier's cybersecurity, cyber risk.
Yeah.
And personally, this is something which we never grew up in, is a reputation.
Oh, like it's a bad reputation?
Yeah, another risk is reputation.
Oh.
So like, for example, Nike or the shoemaking brand, it took a hit when folks found out this is part of the ESG risk. Ethical, social, is they use child labor from somewhere in Southeast Asia to make the certain footwear.
So if people find out something bad about one of your suppliers, it makes your company look bad too.
Yeah, and that is now part of a core tenet of any company you pick up out there. They have to follow this. And these are the risks that you think about when you source anything.
Yeah. You know what another risk is that I learned when we were working together?
Yeah.
Is climate risk.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes a company's warehouse can be wiped out from a hurricane or a fire.
Yeah.
So you have to have multiple suppliers that can give you the same part in case there's a freak accident like that. That's expensive to keep backups of backups just and in case something happens.
Yes. Now there's a new concept called digital twin, where if any reason, everything is in digital world right now, for any reason, ERP shut down, there is a blackout. Now talking about Die Hard Part 4. What do you do? Well, then we have cloud backup, not we. Like people have mitigations in place, especially big companies, to have the digital manufacturing twin where all the know-how, all the algorithms are already set in place. We can duplicate as easily as it was before.
Ah, but that would have to have major cybersecurity.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
But the risk, the gain is probably worth the risk because if it's almost like insurance. If you need it, it's there.
Yeah, it absolutely. And think about this, you know, you come to Bay Area, and you've lived and worked in the Bay Area too. Half the Californians live on the fault line. Sometimes we take earthquake insurance.
Yep.
What's our backup? We don't have much apart from pray to the Lord.
The thing about an earthquake, knock on wood, is that it's not like a hurricane where you see it coming from a week away.
Yes.
An earthquake is like devastating immediately.
Yes.
I hope that never happens here.
Hope not.
Hope not.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that goes into global supply chain. And I mean, is all supply chain global, or can you have just national supply chain?
Unlikely in this day and age.
Yeah.
Maybe 40 years ago, probably. No, you can pick up any phone. You talk about global supply chain, the components, the chips, the processor, even the software that goes into it. Where is it assembled? We all know it's assembled.
Yes.
Designed here, assembled outside the US.
Right.
Same thing with, if you go to Whole Foods or any grocery store, you see product of Mexico, product of Venezuela, right? Product of Guatemala. There is hardly anything which is, we can call it national or localized supply chain.
And I've heard politicians, a lot of them say we want things to be built in America again. So do you think it's unrealistic for a complex piece of equipment like a cell phone to ever be just manufactured in one country?
Pretty unlikely to happen. Maybe we can assemble it just like the automotive folks have done it in building in Canada. When it was in Delphi, they had to know which percentage was sourced in the US or North America versus percentage sourced coming from other countries. Eventually, within some parts of Michigan, some parts of Canada, they had to declare where it was assembled in USA. Yeah, it's very, very unlikely given how short and how deep each tier of supply chain goes.
Yeah, I think we're a very global economy. We have, I mean, I'm sure it looks like a spud if you were to draw a map between country to country, what we buy, what we trade, what we sell, what we import and export. And
Let's think of even the dress or the jacket. Where is it sourced from?
I got this in Indonesia last month, but I have a feeling it was not made there. But who knows?
Yeah, and same thing. If you buy thing again from the local retailer, Banana Republic or Costco, you pick up the cloth material, they'll tell you where it's made in because they've declared.
And I've seen some really horrific videos of things like sweatshops for fast fashion. There's some companies that are really quick with turning around trendy shirts or dresses or pants or whatever. Do you think that consumers who care about things like that can do their own research about a company and find out the truth? Or do companies try to hide the truth when they have shady business practices like that?
Well, I would say consumers are smart enough today. Most of them are informed consumers because everybody has a walking PC in their hand.
Absolutely.
They can find out. And one of the companies, Patagonia, in fact, had a slogan, "Don't buy from us."
Really?
They do. And then it was driven by the fact, buy from us, because it's driving to the fact, reuse, repurpose, and then how they recycle and what they source, where they source from. It's amazing. And people were well informed. It actually worked the reverse. Their sales went gangbusters.
I bet. I've heard Patagonia does things like on Black Friday, they'll shut down and they won't sell anything.
Correct.
They're like, go get outside.
Yeah.
Go for a hike. Go whitewater rafting today.
Yeah. What? And Patagonia is probably one of the companies I had read. They are walking the talk on ESG governance and making a difference for the global climate.
Yeah, they are definitely a role model for companies out there. I know I've heard some of the things that they do, and I think that's pretty amazing. A question from one of our listeners is, what is the hottest thing in supply chain today, or one of the hottest things in supply chain?
Being knowledgeable of how artificial intelligence will impact your career or some part of your life in the next 6 to 12 months or even 18 months.
No matter how old you are or where you are in your career?
Absolutely. The biggest reason is, think about 25 years ago, people had still dial-up link to the internet or even the rotary phone 30, 40 years ago. They're now in museums. It's hardly ever you see the movies.
That's horrifying. I feel old. Okay.
But now, the next generation, or even the current generation, is the application of AI and how we are able to remove the repeatable process, or can we replace it, replace AI or technology to help you assist in as simple as grocery shopping to getting things delivered to your home.
That would be so nice.
Yeah.
Do you think that AI will help people have more free time because it takes the repeatable, maybe tedious activities out of your day? Or do you think it's going to be an added complication to people's lives because it's a new technology?
So the technology adoption is always the most trickiest part. I'll say this. Humans are there for a moment. You know, at this point in time, if I was given some more free time, I would go hike in Alum Rock right now and come back and think more of more creative ways to use AI in daily life.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are already tech companies who use drones for delivery in certain part of UK. It's still not approved here in the US because the federal aviation rules are still a little bit more complex. There's a small barrier to breach at this point in time.
And you're talking about drones dropping off a carton of eggs in somebody's front yard?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So they're doing that in the UK?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
The UK cut it out, but Amazon is doing it. They tested out. They got approval from the UK, federal, the aviation authorities. And they have a space where it gets lightweight in because some drones are just watching your satellite mapping. These drones can carry about 1 pound to 3 pounds weight.
Okay.
And they drop off groceries.
Wow.
So you don't have to do any, that's also lowering carbon footprint, right?
Yes.
Gas or recharge. Just.
Yeah, you have to drive to the store.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So another question I have for you is, how important is education in supply chains? And do you ever stop learning? Is it a continuous thing? Tell me a little bit about that.
I love this question because one of the things I learned, not just from my mentors here, but also from my own parents, if you are a student forever, that means your learning never stops. That also means you accumulate knowledge and see how you can apply to rest of the community where you live.
I love that.
Yeah. And to me, I've always looked at different avenues and modes of learning, and it can be formal or informal. Currently, I'm finishing up a course, a leadership course at School of Business.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And it's called LEAD Certificate. It stands for LEAD, Learn, Engage, Accelerate, and Disrupt.
Ooh.
I'm over to finish up. And then there are a couple of courses extremely valuable that I thought have made a difference in my view of the world and also my own leadership style.
Let's talk about resources. What books or podcasts have you listened to or read lately that you want to recommend?
Yeah. One of the most recent ones that have made a massive impression from my own communication skill, apart from the LEAD course. So this is a podcast by Matt Abrams. It's called Think Fast, Talk Smart.
Okay.
And multiple episodes available on podcast, but the recent one I was listening in when driving up was the episode he interviews Dan Pink, who's multiple author and also one of the speech writers for former Vice President Al Gore.
Oh.
He talks about being curious on the power of regret and how reflective it is in his book, which to me is super helpful when I'm not only a dad, but also a husband, and keeping all those things in balance.
It's not easy. There's a lot to juggle.
Yeah. And it's fulfilling. And you think about what's the power of regret. Not about having a regret, but how do you energize and move forward?
Yeah. You know, talking about family, you are essentially the supply chain leader of your family too. You're a dad, you're a husband, you have a job, you need groceries, you have a car. There are things that you need to get your family running and keep it running smoothly. So do you ever employ things that you use or learn at work to your family life? Do you feel like your skills come in handy at home?
Little bit, but I'm also learning more from my fifth grader on how to negotiate.
No. Oh, no.
As much as I learned from, like, it's about how do you put the message across in the most simplified way that fifth grader can understand. I cannot use, as you know, I cannot use all complex terminologies, and it's all about simplify your message and be more patient with how things will run. Eventually, they're all good, you know, they'll all come to pass. They'll all be happening for the good and positive things in your life.
I love that. I love that you negotiate. I think negotiation is so important, especially for people in an office environment or in a corporate environment. One thing that I have learned about negotiation is there are givers and there are takers in the world. But if you can figure out what the other party wants and give that to them while you're getting what you need, and you can both give to each other and also take, that's the key to negotiation, in my opinion. I think if both parties can feel like they walk away winning at the end of the day, that's the best kind of strategy. It's the best kind of negotiation.
Absolutely.
It's not always easy, though.
Yeah. It's like each negotiation is different because how you're negotiating, who are you, who's across the table?
Right.
You know, in a business setup is different versus in a home environment is completely different. Sometimes you have to give a lot before you'll win. In a business setup, it's always what's the long-term end goal for both parties? And then how do you navigate finding the balance towards it? Sometimes it's difficult. I myself have done a course in Harvard, a negotiation program on negotiation.
Oh, I should look into that. That sounds cool.
This was several years ago. But most recently, a couple of my resources that I've gone into is Mark Raffan, R-A-F-F-A-N, Mark Raffan. He is a great podcaster, a great publisher. He has a fantastic series in his LinkedIn profile. I enjoy watching his videos, even with small clips, great resource. And then one of my very good ex-colleagues back in Minnesota, her name is Danielle Hansen. Mm-hmm. She also went to advanced negotiating class at Harvard. And she started her own, I would say consulting, but also she teaches, along with being a VP of supply chain right now. Another great resource if anybody wants to look into.
I think everybody should look into it. I think negotiation skills is one of the that is relevant in any field, any job.
Uh-huh.
If you're a waitress, if you're a CEO, and everything in between. Absolutely. So I want to switch topics and talk about, we talked a little bit about the economic landscape, the political environment. There are a lot of layoffs happening. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I think Oracle just laid off thousands of people today or yesterday. Google has laid off, I think, almost 15,000 this year alone. Do you think that there's anything that employees can do to prepare themselves for that? And if there's anything special with your job, you know, how do you keep going at the same time as being cautious and preparing yourself for what's to come?
There's a famous quote. I believe it's either from Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan. I was actually listening to a small clip from Kobe because my son had to put across a message that you got to prepare and practice. He just can't show up and think I'm not good enough. It's because he's in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you say it? Because as a dad, he wouldn't be thinking anymore. I have to have 2 hours talking.
He doesn't think here. They're not cool all knowing anymore.
Yeah, no, it's not cool enough. Also, there's another saying where you need to have a sharp knife before you use it, right? Because you have to prepare it. Be back already.
Mm-hmm.
Back to your question. It's unfortunate that companies are laying off. It's impacted everybody, especially their lives.
Yep.
If people are supporting, if this whole breadwinner, there's always anxiety and concern. One thing I do advise everyone is do keep networking even while you are employed.
100%.
Yeah. And it's not your first level network, not the family and friends you know. It's your second and third level network that you rely on and be able to tap into when you have to, tap into it.
It's more important to network and communicate with people when you still have a job and you don't need their help.
Correct.
Then when you do need their help, you're not just coming to them out of the blue. Oh, I haven't talked to you in 5 years, but can you help me with the favor? It's better to just reach out to a couple of people, say, hey, how you doing? I was thinking about you the other day. I saw this and it reminded me of you. How are you?
Yeah.
Then in 6 months, say, oh, lost the job. Do you know anybody?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it goes back to another saying, I don't know if it's Art of War, but I've had this come to my mind right now is when you want to go to the battle, you don't go with a blunt knife or a sword. You have to have the sword sharp enough. That means, are your skills relevant today? You know, it can be as simple as negotiation skill to deep category expertise.
Yep.
How relevant it is, not 10 years ago, but now. And then second thing is, are you giving back to the community that can be publish something on LinkedIn daily, or do you go to local chapters like procurement probably to Institute of Supply Management, local chapters, and are you actively volunteering, sharing your knowledge? That makes a big difference.
And I think that's so important, especially when we talk about personal branding.
Yeah.
Giving back and providing value to people that are of no value to you necessarily, but just giving out of the kindness of your heart and sharing what you know, just to make the world a better place. Maybe you share something and somebody goes, that was the missing piece. I didn't know that. I think that's so important for personal branding. So tell me, are you actively using LinkedIn? Is that one of the things that you like to use? I know that you've put some videos out, which were wonderful. So tell me, what do you use LinkedIn for? And what tips do you have for people on LinkedIn?
I use LinkedIn for a couple of myself. One is sharing some of the knowledge that I have gained by interviewing certain leaders in my domain or outside my domain. But the purpose is even inspiring one or two people, individuals who may be in the phase of their career, that if certain individuals have gone out and become VPs or have bigger titles and responsibilities, they also started somewhere.
Yeah.
And you can too. But you need to prepare and practice. So it's not rocket science. You can do it too.
Yeah.
The second aspect is, you can call it personal branding, but I enjoy LinkedIn, and I'm following a few folks too, including yourself. Nice career advice for up-and-coming professionals, which is helpful, and I take a few tips. But I also avoid, social schooling there.
I'm not very good at avoiding that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I find myself 2 hours in and I'm like, there's better things I could be doing at that time.
And then there are great events, fun events, both in my Stanford Business School alumni network and also former colleagues network, where I touch if I'm able to talk to them for a long time. I understand industry news that comes out. LinkedIn has a really cool feature where there's a summarized version of daily news that comes out.
Ah, I should look into that.
Yeah. And then one of the favorite, especially healthcare related, was Becker's Healthcare's podcast or summary. Becker, I think, is well known in the industry. And I enjoy his publishing and the methodology of how he interviews leaders. So I look out for inspiration myself.
Mm-hmm.
And including networking, that's how I use LinkedIn. And what I've seen LinkedIn is it's more relevant in North America. Slowly, it's getting more relevant in outside of North America, and in most parts of Europe. Definitely going big now. I was seeing Asia, or specifically India. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I've noticed that too, that sometimes I talk about LinkedIn and I have some international followers and they say, I don't use LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if it's relevant to you, use it. If it's not, that's okay. I'm sure there's other apps, other professional social media platforms in other areas too. Yeah.
True. But LinkedIn definitely is more powerful than it was 10 years ago.
That's how I've gotten my last 3 jobs.
Wow.
I just message recruiters and I say, hey, I saw you posted about this open job. Here's my resume. I think I'd be a great fit based on this, this, and this. Let me know if you want to have a conversation. And a lot of them say yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I get jobs.
The power of simple ask with more context gets you there.
Yeah. I used to be so afraid to ask for what I wanted or ask for something because somebody would say no. But the answer is always no if you don't ask.
Exactly. You assume it's a no, then it's always a no.
Yeah, you can't win a lottery if you don't buy a ticket. Yeah.
The worst thing that can happen is they can say no, but at least you made the attempt and they at least know you by name.
Yep. Have you ever heard of rejection therapy?
No, I have not, please.
So rejection therapy is if you are a people pleaser, if you are scared of rejection, you are scared of somebody saying no, so you just don't ask for what you want. Rejection therapy is, you can do it for a week, 2 weeks, 100 days, whatever you want. It's doing things and asking for things that you assume would be a no. For example, and it's random, it's not work related.
Mm-hmm.
You go into a grocery store and you say, hey, can you give me a tour of the back of the grocery store? And if they say no, then you go, okay, no problem. And then you leave. But what if they say yes? And then you get a tour of the back of the grocery store. So the point is not to ask about things that matter all that much, but just to ask things that are kind of a ridiculous request. But if somebody says yes, then you start to realize that, oh, the answer is not always going to be no. And even when they say no, it's okay. The grocery store didn't crumble on me, didn't catch fire. I didn't burst into flames when somebody told me no. So rejection therapy is a form of getting to ask ridiculous questions to people and getting told no once in a while. But sometimes you hear yes and you start to understand, oh, it's not so bad. It's sometimes the no's are yeses.
I love the way you worded that, but also I'm reflecting on that. It's also the courage to even ask something even irrelevant.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. I don't say, it doesn't matter yes or no. There's a remote chance they'll say yes, then you get something that you never thought wildly that would be what possible.
Mm-hmm. Something that I'm trying to train myself to do is not ask for what I want, but ask for 10% more than that. And then I can use negotiation to, if the other party says, I can't give you that, but I can give you a little bit less, then I still get what I wanted. But it's they're feeling like they got a good deal. That's something that I've learned is ask for more than you need. And that's been helpful for me because, you know, asking for a raise, for example, if you want a 10% raise, ask for 15%. And if they say no, sorry, then say, okay, how about 10? It's funny, we learn these things through our career. And something that I'm trying to do lately is build a video course and write a book about things that you don't learn in college, like we're talking about, negotiation skills and how to deal with a no opportunity, rejection therapy. So, we talked about giving back on LinkedIn and sharing what you know. That's one of my passions because I felt like I didn't know a lot starting out. And I stumbled a lot at the beginning of my career.
Yes.
And this is what my TEDx talk is going to be about in December. You've come a long way in your career. So have I. And it wasn't easy at first, was it?
No.
Did you stumble ever?
It's all the time.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah. And I call it can be minor bruised. And I think about injuries kids have while playing in a playground. It can be a scratch on your knee or elbow. Sometimes somebody has a little bit low. Genius, it's always somebody there to catch him, especially at that age, it's parents.
Yep.
And some other part be guides or mentors in your early career.
Mm-hmm.
They'll shape you like, yep, do this. This is how, you know, you are to shape your communication and navigate through that path of where you want to land eventually. Having that vision, sometimes early in the career, it's very tough.
Yes.
My biggest suggestion and if there's one takeaway for early career professional is try to read one book a month, if not one per week, and seek out mentors outside your network. You never know what nugget that will get you.
Yeah.
And will go away.
I love that. And sometimes you don't know what information you're looking for, but a mentor can help you with that.
Yes.
And I talk about on social media, I talk about how to ask for a mentor, why you need one, why they're wonderful, what you can learn from them. And I think one thing that I want people to understand is that you don't just go and ask somebody, will you be my mentor? It almost sounds like, will you be my Valentine? There's a lot more to it than that. It has to be a mutual understanding. You have to be grateful if somebody is able to mentor you. And I've seen it. I've seen mentorship be more of a casual, unspoken thing than a formal, will you be my mentor? Yes, let's meet twice a week. Let's talk about these things. It's oftentimes more like, wow, there's that person I really admire at work. I'm going to ask him out to lunch in the cafeteria, just ask him a couple questions, see if there's anything I can help them with. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it blossoms into a beautiful professional relationship where you can lean on them, they can offer you guidance, and it's a wonderful thing. Do you mentor anybody at work?
I do. At work, but also outside work. It's a different form of fulfillment for me on how I can give back. I also get mentored at work and outside work too. Although most of it for me has been informal.
Yep.
But I seek our advice when I'm at the crossroads of, hey, am I doing this right? If I need even a sounding board, I have a couple of ex-coworkers, ex-managers who I call, even if it's 3 months, 6 months. Seek out, like, here's where I'm like, how do I do this? How do I balance this? Am I doing this right? I have these tools that my mind I thought I was doing it right.
Yes. And your mentor doesn't always need to be older and more experienced than you.
Yes.
I call friends all the time and I call them mentorship moments. I'll just have a conversation. It's not like they're mentoring me long term, but I'll just say, hey, I got a question. Am I crazy for doing this? And they'll say, yep, don't do that. Or they'll say, I wouldn't do it if I were you, but, or they'll say, yeah, go ahead, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I call up friends all the time and I say, especially in different industries. And I say, hey, if you were in this situation, what would you do? And sometimes they'll just give me a whole different perspective that I just hadn't even thought of. And I am so appreciative to people that I can call on and lean on like that.
Yeah.
So another question I have for you is, what transferable skills do you think are important for global supply chain?
Fantastic questions. This is all the favorite questions I get asked by students or soon-to-be graduates entering the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
one thing that I tell all the folks entering global supply chain is understand the financial workflow of your industry or wherever you are. How does money come in terms of how does the revenue get generated? It doesn't matter where you are. And how does the expense flow? It's essentially income and expense. If you understand where income is growing or increasing or decreasing, versus the same thing with the expenses, increasing and decreasing, you know where to act. To me, doesn't matter what industry. For example, if you take my career, I've navigated through automotive, auto equipment, to biotech, medical device, class 3 med device, pharma, and a tech company, and now again in medical technology, med device space. One thing that's always helped me is understanding the financials, cash flow. How does cash flow impact the company, and where does your specific function pay off?
Okay. Did they teach that in school, or is that something you had to learn on the job?
When my co-op at Delphi was my eye-opening experience, while the VPs, who's now well-retired, God bless his heart, Dave Nelson, he's a shipping award winner in HR supply management, and he was a great influence on 30, 40 of the co-ops, and most of us have gone on to do really well. I pride myself listening to that specific advice and always look at where is the cash flow and how are we making an impact. It makes a big difference that you understand the business wherever you are. To me, so then, because it's also agnostic to any business or company you are.
That's true. They all have money flowing in and money flowing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then other aspect of transferable skills, it's more on the softer side, is we talked about the 3 C's earlier.
Yep.
Key to me is collaboration. How well do you collaborate, not just with your immediate team, but the leaders outside your function?
Mm-hmm.
That goes a long way. And then we talked about negotiation skills.
Yep.
Yeah, we negotiate all the time. Formerly, we may not call that. You negotiate with your spouse.
Yeah, you negotiate at the grocery store, at Starbucks, at the laundromat. That's all a negotiation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are skills will go all the way, no matter how many AIs come in. There will be some level of human interaction, and these soft skills will again go a long way.
Yeah.
And last but not least, I would say this, understanding your technology, where technology is impacting you. Make technology your friend, just like financials. How do I use technology to help my long-term goals? And we as simple as, do you want to be a coder? Or do you want to be using neuro-linguistic programming? It can go as complex or as simple.
Yeah.
Understand that?
Yeah. I think a lot of people might be intimidated by technology, especially with this boom in AI this year. It's overwhelming. Maybe not so much to younger people because they grew up with an iPhone in their hand.
Yeah.
We're starting to see generations of people who were iPhone users from middle school, which is wild. But I think older generations, maybe like Gen X and above, they are sometimes get intimidated by a new technology because it's hard to keep up sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a different thing that comes out every day, and do I need this, and how much is it, and is it going to bring me any value, and are you using it, and how do you use it? It's overwhelming. It's a lot.
Yes. Yeah. Apart from skill set, thing that does come to mind is growth mindset, having growth mindset. There is a very famous author and speaker, Carol Dweck. She is the proponent of growth mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read the book. I've heard her podcast as well. That's something that always reminded more of yet. Using yet at the end of a sentence where you think it's impossible makes a big difference. And I started using it in my own conversation with my fifth grader. And I bring it up because he gives it, I'm like, yeah, you've not done it yet. And that's a big eye-opener for me as a parent.
That's nice. It keeps the door open. It doesn't. You're not just bad at multiplication. You aren't an expert at multiplication yet.
Correct.
Or spelling.
Yes.
Yeah. It leaves the future open-ended and doesn't have your permanent state, your forever state.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that. Avi, it was so good talking to you. I feel like I learned a lot today about supply chain. To be honest, I thought it was a simple thing, but it's not. It sounds like a very complex, cross-functional endeavor, and I'm glad that somebody like you is taking care of it for med device companies out there. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Alison. It was a pleasure to talk to you and also be part of this series. Energized to do more.
Absolutely. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.